So I just want to drill down a little bit more on the numeracy of the situation. We've done tons of projects, particularly in breast cancer. I don't know if you remember the adjuvant online model that was out there, and particularly breast cancer, people would come up with numbers to try to give to patients. So I know you can't take it too far, but I'm just kind of curious, again, if an educated patient asked you this. So you've painted a picture of a situation where, maybe 85% these people are going to recur and die of their disease. How, in your mind, is at this point, is that altered by the use of olaparib in patients with a BRCA germline mutation? How do those numbers change? Do you think that it changes sort of the tail of the curve, for example?
I hope that it does. And I think the primary analysis, the PFS analysis, really makes a strong statement to that effect. When you talk about sort of the numbers with patients in the past, pre-SOLO-1, we had no prospective data in large numbers on patients with BRCA mutations sort of treated in a consistent fashion and followed in a consistent fashion. So there's this myth that they were this group that everybody was cured and they had this just remarkable long progression-free survival. And they do better, and that is true. But they don't do as well as I think everybody thought they did. And SOLO-1 shows that. So in the placebo arm, they had a median progression-free survival of 13 months. And that's measured from the end of chemotherapy. So to normalize that to other clinical trials, maybe add 5 or 6 months. So it's 18 to 19 months, which is a little longer than you see in a non-BRCA population, but it's not, forever. And it's not a bunch of cured patients. So they're very high risk, to my point. When you add 2 years of olaparib to patients who have finished and responded to induction chemotherapy, their median progression-free survival at the time of data cut point, which was May of 2018, was not yet reached. But we have an estimate of it based on some sensitivity analyses that are in the paper, but it's roughly between 47 and 50 months. So just orders of magnitude longer than placebo. And more importantly is when you look at the survival curves in the manuscript, the shape or the morphology of the survival curve for the olaparib group flattens, and it stays flat even after that 2-year mark where they discontinue whatever treatment they're assigned to, in this case, olaparib. And so you don't see patients in the bevacizumab studies, when you discontinued it, you started to see patients start recurring. Here, you stop it and the curve remains flat, and it remained flat to the point of data cutoff. So it's too early to know if we've cured patients. We've certainly markedly changed the trajectory of their disease by extending progression-free survival 1 in a very profound way. Will that convert into cures is the important question. And we hope so, but we won't be able to say that probably until 2023. But the magnitude of benefit is unprecedented.
So what was the actual recurrence rate at whatever, 3 years, whatever point you want to pick, the actual recurrence rate, not disease-free time, recurrence rate in the treated and untreated group at whatever, 3 years, whatever time you looked at?
So at 3 years, which is the point where we had the most kind of mature data, the placebo group, 27% of them were recurrence free. So 73% had recurred by 3 years. And in the olaparib group, it was only about 37% had recurred. So it was very different in that group.
Right.
We have data out to 4 years, but there were a lot of patients in between 3 and 4 years still. So that time point's a little less mature to quote. So the 3-year mark's probably our best data to quote.
When you think about it, I consider the SOLO-1 data adjuvant data. Is that the way you look at it?
I think you can think of it as adjuvant. That's not a term we use a lot in GYN oncology. We like this maintenance term. But when we think of adjuvant, we think of like an endometrial cancer patient that maybe you took lymph nodes out of and they were positive.
Right, yeah.
You're giving some adjuvant with the expectation of cure.
Well, I guess the
breast cancer. Yeah.
I noticed that you all don't use that term, but in terms of the model of treating without demonstrable disease. But the point I was going to make is when you think about adjuvant trials, and it's been a long time, if any cancer had those numbers you just quoted are so dramatic. You don't see that in most adjuvant trials in, solid tumors. Maybe there's a 20% relative risk reduction or 30, but those are, really unusually positive numbers. Just to put that a little bit in context.